Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small really throw my body off balance?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Fruit ruins insulin sensitivity.
Never eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs by 30%. Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads. No fear, just your signal. Cygnos.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You ever watch someone try to pretend a fire isn't happening while standing in front of a burning building? That's what it felt like watching the defense try to dismantle Mia's testimony today in the federal trial of Sean Diddy Combs. Only instead of smoke and flames, it was years of psychological manipulation, coercion, and, if you believe the prosecution, abuse so insidious that even Mia's post-employment text messages couldn't quite extinguish the truth. Day opened with defense attorney Brian Steele back at the podium, laser-focused on one objective: take Mia's credibility and grind it down to dust. She'd already delivered several days of gut-wrenching testimony, accusing Combs of everything from rape to violent emotional manipulation. Now, it was the defense's turn to try and convince the jury that none of it held water. And Steele came in swinging. First move: display a curated reel of Mia's own words, the kind sent from a phone, polished for public consumption. There were Instagram posts calling Combs a legend. Text messages as recent as 2022, where she responded, "I love, love, love you," to messages from him. Even a cheerful birthday video she'd once made for his 44th birthday, grinning and gushing about how he was one of the biggest inspirations in her life. Steele tossed that one into the courtroom like a grenade. He asked her plainly, "The man you're now calling a brutal abuser, was that the same person you praised on camera?" Mia didn't flinch. "Yes," she said. Her tone didn't waver. And so began the psychological tug of war. Steele pressed hard on the fact that Mia never called the police, never sought medical treatment, never snapped a picture or saved a voicemail. He kept returning to that gap as if the absence of evidence erased the reality of what she claimed happened behind closed doors. At one point, he brought up a specific allegation: Combs slamming her arm in a door, no medical records, no scream, no witnesses. Mia calmly explained, "I was in shock." She didn't scream because she was stunned, not because it didn't happen. Steele didn't stop there. He dug into her employment record, claiming she'd been fired in 2017 for showing up late and drinking on the job. Mia, again, denied it flatly. According to her, the job ended under different circumstances. Still, to the jury, Steele was building a picture of someone unreliable, maybe even vengeful. The implication was clear. Could someone this inconsistent be trusted with the truth? Mia wasn't just sitting there taking punches. She explained why she had continued to message Combs with love even after the alleged abuse ended. Her words were chilling. I was still psychologically under his control. She compared the relationship to a constant cycling between violent lows and euphoric highs, where affection was a reward and silence was survival. Brainwashed, she said. That was the word she used, like she was still under the influence of the man she'd finally broken away from. Then came the moments that shifted the energy in the room. Prosecutor Maureen Comey stood up and objected. Not to a specific question, but to the entire tone of the cross-examination. She called it humiliating, harassing. She warned the court that this kind of cross could do more than just damage a witness. It could scare off other victims from ever coming forward. Eyes are on this trial, she told the judge. Victims in other cases are going to see how victims are treated. It was a bold move, almost a dare. If the justice system can't protect witnesses like Maya from being publicly gutted on the stand, who's going to come forward next? Judge Arun Subramanian listened. He didn't shut Steele down, said he hadn't heard yelling, didn't think things had crossed a legal line, but he did issue a warning. Watch the tone, mind the form. Steele adjusted. The courtroom exhaled. When redirect began, the prosecution came back with precision. They didn't try to reinvent Mia's story. They clarified it, cleaned it up, put it in context. The affectionate posts, they were part of her job, literally. Promoting Combs on social media was written into her duties. The more flattering the post, the safer her position. If she slipped up, if she failed to praise him publicly, the punishment would come fast. Screaming, humiliation, threats to her job. The cheerful Instagram clips weren't love letters. They were armor. The prosecutor guided Mia through each alleged assault, contrasting them against the curated highlight reel of her public life. Why didn't you post about the time he allegedly slammed Cassie's head into a bed frame? Because I would have been punished. Why no post about the time he allegedly threw a computer at your head? Same reason. Why didn't you post about the sexual assault? Her voice didn't crack, but the weight behind her yes was enough. These weren't just omissions. They were survival mechanisms. Then the question of timing came back. Why did she wait until months into her cooperation with the government to disclose the rapes? Mia said it wasn't about deception. It was about fear. Even in front of prosecutors with a chance to speak safely, she was terrified to say it out loud. She had to process it, had to come to terms with it herself. The same man who'd once controlled her schedule, her public image, her perception of herself, he still loomed over her, even in absentia. And when she said it out loud, finally, in that courtroom, it wasn't with the theatricality of someone out for revenge. It was quiet. She said she didn't want to be there. She hated talking about it. This is the worst thing I've ever had to talk about in my life, she said. She wasn't there for herself. She was doing it because she couldn't look her goddaughters and nieces in the eyes if she didn't. That's how she ended her time on the stand. Not with a dramatic flourish, no tears for the camera, just a clear-eyed, exhausted sense of duty. The kind of testimony that doesn't yell, but echoes. Judge Subramanian thanked her and dismissed her from the stand. Just like that, Mia's multi-day testimony, the emotional spine of the prosecution's case so far, was done. But the prosecution wasn't done. Not by a long shot. Because what followed next moved the case from the deeply personal to something far more tangible. Physical evidence, hotel records, surveillance footage waiting in the wings. If the emotional weight of Mia's testimony left the courtroom heavy, what came next was colder, cleaner, less about feelings and more about facts. With Mia's story now in the record, the prosecution moved to show that it wasn't just her word they were asking the jury to believe. They had receipts. Literally. That's where Sylvia Okun came in. She's not a dramatic witness, not a victim, not someone with a tear-soaked story. She's a records custodian for the Beverly Hills Hotel. Her job is to know who stayed where, when, and what kind of mess they left behind. And when she took the stand, she brought with her a paper trail that painted a picture of excess. Excess that matched the accounts we've already heard in vivid, often disturbing detail. Oaken testified that Sean Combs frequently checked into the hotel using aliases, not uncommon for celebrities, but these weren't subtle. Frank Black was one. Another was Philip Pines, which raised eyebrows in court because that name belonged to someone who used to work for Combs. It wasn't just a fake name pulled from thin air. It was borrowed identity. Why does that matter? Because prosecutors are building a case not just about abuse, but about control, about concealment, and about the machinery it takes to run the kind of lifestyle they say Combs was orchestrating. Then came the charges. Actual hotel bills. We're not talking about mini bar overages or late checkout fees. These were things like $300 for drapes so heavily soiled they needed specialized cleaning. Or $500 for something the hotel called oil damage to one of their private bungalows. Oken clarified that those kinds of charges only show up when the room has been damaged beyond typical use. In other words, not your average champagne and room service kind of stay. It didn't take much imagination to connect those details with what previous witnesses have described. Marathon sex parties, dubbed freak-offs, where baby oil was allegedly used by the gallon. Earlier testimony even mentioned investigators finding more than 1,000 bottles of baby oil in Combs' residences. That number seemed cartoonish when we first heard it. But now here it was showing up again. This time in a hotel invoice, not alleged, not emotional, just a receipt. A smudged fingerprint of truth, if you will, on a paper trail that supports something much harder to stomach. Oken wasn't there to offer judgment or analysis. She read off dates, names, room numbers, and dollar amounts. But in doing so, she anchored the prosecution's case in a reality that even the most skeptical juror would have trouble waving away. And unlike Mia, who brought emotion and context, Oken brought neutral corroboration. There was no crying, no storytelling, just data, and the implication that yes, there's a pattern here. But even as the jury processed those ledgers, something bigger loomed in the background. A video, not yet shown, but waiting just off stage like Chekhov's gun. The court took time before the jury arrived to debate the admissibility of what prosecutors are calling one of the most important pieces of evidence in the entire trial. A 2016 surveillance video that allegedly shows Combs assaulting his then-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, in a hotel hallway. Now, if you've been following the case, you've already heard Cassie's name. She's been a central figure since the earliest days of the investigation. Her lawsuit was the first domino to fall, and many of the other witnesses have echoed themes that started with her allegations. But this video, if it gets in, changes everything. Because while most of the trial so far has rested on testimony, people recalling what they saw, what they felt, what they remember, this would be different. This is surveillance footage, emotionless, unflinching, and not subject to cross-examination. The judge didn't rule on it yet. Instead, he said they'd revisit once the proper foundation was laid. That's legal speak for wait until someone from the hotel gets on the stand who can authenticate it. That person, we're told, is coming tomorrow. Eddie Garcia, a security guard from the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles, is expected to take the stand and confirm both the contents and the chain of custody of the video. If that happens, and the video is admitted, it could be a turning point. Because there's a world of difference between hearing someone describe abuse and watching it unfold in grainy, time-stamped footage. One engages the heart, the other the gut. Outside the courtroom, the story isn't slowing down either. This isn't just a trial about one man anymore. It's a broader conversation about power, celebrity, and whether people at the top are finally being held to account. On June 2nd, the ripple effects even reached the White House. President Donald Trump, yes, that Donald Trump, was asked about a potential pardon for Sean Combs. Trump said no one had asked yet, but if they did, he'd look into it. He claimed he hadn't been following the case closely. Whether that's true or not is anyone's guess, but the fact that the question was even raised tells you just how big this has gotten. And it wasn't just the political world chiming in. From the shadows of a California prison, Suge Knight weighed in too. Yes, Knight, the infamous Death Row Records co-founder who once stood at the center of the East Coast, West Coast rap wars, and is now serving time for manslaughter. Knight gave a phone interview to ABC News, where he made a pointed observation. His take: the industry itself is on trial, not just Combs. He warned that if the justice system only punishes one person, it risks missing the forest for the trees. According to Knight, the culture of trading sex for favors of unchecked exploitation has been part of the music business for decades. Combs, he said, shouldn't be the scapegoat for an entire machine. Now, you can take Knight's comments with as many grains of salt as you like. He's hardly a neutral observer. But it's telling that even from prison, he felt compelled to speak up. Because whether you believe Combs is guilty of everything alleged or not, this trial is clearly hitting a nerve across the industry. It's not just about criminal liability anymore. It's about accountability. About who knew what, who enabled what, and whether the glittering empire Combs built was constructed on the back of something much darker. And back in court, as prosecutors wrap up their emotional testimony and move toward harder evidence, cleaning fees, hotel aliases, and surveillance footage, you can feel the case shifting. It's moving from memory to record, from personal pain to provable logistics. What started with voices is now being backed by verifiable facts. And tomorrow, if that hallway video comes in, the jury won't just hear about the world Combs allegedly created. They'll see it.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
So they said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small throw my body off balance? Time to consult the online experts.
Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
You only eat after you're walking 10,000 steps.
Fast.
Stop it.
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time. Cygnos.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.